Welcome back to another episode of On The Record. I'm Mike Graham. You are?
Mike Porky Parry.
And this is, of course, one of the many episodes that we put out twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yep.
You can now get it on Spotify if you haven't got it already.
That's right.
iTunes, podcasting platforms all over the place.
6 million listeners.
6 million listens.
Yes,
not 6 million listeners, which is not quite the same thing.
Yep.
However, what we're doing today is Ask Porky.
Yes.
Because we've got a new month.
Yes.
And obviously every month, once a month, we do Ask Porky, the place where you can get all sorts of great advice, guidance, and general kind of information for problems that you need to solve. Now, I've got loads of really good questions, some of which are on Facebook, some of which are on Twitter.
Okay.
You can, of course, find the two mics on both of those places.
Okay, so do you want a bit of rapid fire here?
We're going to kick off with Phil on Facebook. He says, Porky, if you had to choose your last three alcoholic drinks you could ever drink, what would they be?
Well, I hope I'll never come to that stage, but if they were in order, right?
Yes.
And I would be eating at the time as well. So it'd be a pint of beer, pint of Ruddles beer.
Uh-huh. Ruddles?
Ruddles.
Okay.
Followed by a glass of large glass of delightful French wine. Mm. Okay.
Any particular colour?
Red.
Red. Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I should have said that French red.
Yeah.
So something like a bone or a, you know, from a Beaujolais family, so to speak.
Yes.
You know, but fleury, bone, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I'd finish that with a cocktail, which would be a large Southern Comfort.
Large Southern Comfort.
Oh, my favourite
just with
grog.
Ice.
My favourite grog. Yeah, over ice. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, over ice. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, funny enough, on the same theme, Richard says this. When the Grim Reaper finally catches up with you, how would you like Everton Football Club to mark your passing?
Well, I don't go with this thing about scattering the ashes around the pitch or over the pitch or anything like that, OK? I think that's maudlin and horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And ashes aren't ashes anyway. Ashes are just dust. You know,
well, do you know, I've always wondered about ashes, right?
Yeah,
and maybe you can answer this question.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've never found the right answer from any undertaker.
No.
And they don't like talking about this.
No.
But when you go to a crematorium...
That's right.
...and you get pushed through the old, you know, the fire is in the background.
That's right,
you get pushed through the curtains, you're in a coffin.
Yeah.
Do they burn you in the coffin?
Yes, they do, yeah.
Are you sure?
Well, we had to go through this, sadly, with my mum's departure last year, and we got an absolute assurance that if we wanted to take the ashes with us in an urn, which they gave us afterwards, they were definitely my mum's ashes. And it's a different system there. It's, I know what you mean about going through the... It's all very modern, this, isn't it? Going through the curtains.
Yeah, well, everybody has to do it at some point.
But it's on a platform which stands there at the front of the church, right? And then there are no curtains. The platform just goes down.
No, does it?
Yeah, it's just
I guess
like
it
that.
Depends where you are.
It depends where you are.
Well,
but
hang
anyway,
on, if you're in a church, surely that's not where the cremation happens.
The crematoriums have chapels where the service takes place.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, that's it. That's where most...
Well, I've only seen them going off on a sort of conveyor belt.
No, neither had I. But I had to meet the vicar before the funeral, that kind of stuff. And he said, no, as you're led out with the music, and the music, leaving music for my mum's was Cilla Black's, "You're my world, you are my night and day."
I don't think I know that one.
Yeah, "You're my world, you're everything."
Oh, yeah.
I say.
It doesn't sound like Cilla Black to me.
Yeah, it is Cilla Black. It's one of my mum's favourite songs because mum's from Birkenhead and Cilla Black was from Merseyside, you know. And they promised it. Anyway, we didn't want to take them.
But
because,
what I'm saying is, right, without again wishing to dwell on these things, you buy a coffin, which is pretty expensive.
Very expensive.
Why wouldn't they just take the body out of the coffin and burn it and then you can have the coffin back?
Because the coffins are made to measure, and therefore it wouldn't be of any use to anybody else.
Could you not resell it?
Why would you resell a coffin?
Well, because things are... I mean, they cost thousands, don't they?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Right?
Well, the funeral costs thousands, but the actual coffin itself...
Well, the actual coffin does cost a lot of money.
It costs quite a lot, but you've got to remember, a bit like, you know, when you go to B&Q or somewhere like that.
B&Q?
Yeah, and
your coffin department.
No. Well, you could say that. It'll happen one of these days.
I've been to the bathroom section.
It'll happen one of these days. Yeah. But when you buy, like, a big Billy at B&Q,
a Billy.
It's a book shelf.
I thought that was in IKEA. It's called a Billy.
Billy, that's right. IKEA, that's right. Yeah. Don't I say B&Q? No, I meant IKEA.
Right.
I meant IKEA. So you buy a Billy, big boy, or something like that.
Right.
You know, and that's a
big boy.
Yeah, that's a bookshelf.
Yeah.
And you have to remember while you're putting it together, you can tell from the ends of the planks. Talking about planks, right? That of course it's only the outside which is laminated.
Yeah.
And the inside is just balsa wood. Okay.
Well, that depends.
Well, if it's not balsa wood, what else is it?
Well, it depends.
It's a very cheap wood, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
It's not oak or anything like that.
No, of course not.
And a coffin's not made of oak or anything like that.
Well, some can. You can have a coffin made of oak.
Well, you can if you demand, but that will cost you another 7,000 quid.
So you got a cheap one, did you?
No, we didn't get a cheap one. We got a very expensive one for my mother's, you know,
but it's also upholstered on the inside.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, all of that.
So, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it would make more sense in this day and age in which we live, where not a lot of people have got a lot of money.
Yes.
That you could reuse it.
No, you can't reuse it.
Of course you can.
No, you wouldn't. Somebody comes to you and says, oh, here, why don't you use this coffin for your mother's death? The last person in it was so-and-so. You are joking.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind
You
that.
Commit that to the flames.
My mother, right, is going to be 95
You commit
this month,
that to the flames on their journey to their final resting place.
No, you're getting
conned.
Yes,
you do.
I'm not. The problem is, right, the ashes then, which are given to the family afterwards, and I'm not being specific here, they then include the wood. So, you know, the idea that you're carrying around, your dead loved one is rubbish.
No, it's because about the ceremony of the...
No,
of,
you're carrying around the bloody wood.
Let's move on. This is Ask Porky, not an investigation into funerals.
Well, I can tell you this.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, we once went to a hotel in Torquay.
Yes.
And there was a woman sitting there who looked very weird and was quite old.
Yeah.
And she had this kind of... sort of, I don't know, vase, if you like, for want of a better word, on the table when we used to come and have breakfast every day.
Right.
The guy that owned the place said it was her husband's ashes.
So it looked like the ashes itself.
It was like an urn.
Thing.
Like an urn. She carried them around with her.
Yeah. Well, Paul Yates, of course, who managed to kill herself 12 months after Michael Hutchins, her partner in life, died.
Yeah, an overdose,
Well, Michael Hutchins hanged himself on the back door of a hotel bedroom, didn't he? Well, when he was apparently exploring...
Auto-asphyxiation, erotica. Erotica.
To give himself a bigger
hard-on. Supposedly with a couple of hookers.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Whilst he was indulging in sexual relations, and it kind of went a bit wrong, you know.
Well, it certainly did go a bit wrong.
Yeah, so so then she was at his funeral.
Yeah.
Remember they had all those, like, thousands of lilies on top of his coffin?
No, white lilies. Not really.
Yeah, it was in Australia.
Yeah.
And then she took the ashes, and then she actually she took one little part of the ashes and sewed them into the pillow on her bed so she could sleep next to Michael every night. And she had another packet of ashes that she carried around in her handbag all the time.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter. She was as fucking screwed up as Michael Hutchins
was.
Well,
that's not very nice. You shouldn't speak ill of the dead.
Well, she went and killed herself then on an overdose.
Oh, hang on. You shouldn't speak ill of the dead.
Well, I'm not speaking ill of the dead.
I mean, you said she was a fucking nutcase.
Well, she was. But, I mean, that was when she was alive, you know. I don't know what she's like when she's dead. Can we move on, please?
Yes, all right.
Yeah.
Here's one from William.
Yeah.
Porky, when should I start mowing the lawn, as you should know, as you have a roof garden?
I have a roof garden, and it's been an incredibly mild spring so far. Well, mild February. We haven't even got to spring yet, so it's mild winter. And, in fact, I've suffered on my lawn area in my roof garden.
What do you mean your lawn area?
My lawn area, my roof garden.
Lawn area.
Of course I've got a lawn area.
You've got planks there. I mean, you've got planks
Italian
of wood.
Italian tiles.
Yeah, well, there's no lawn, though.
There's a lawn area at the end, okay?
Is there?
Yeah, which I cultivate. But unfortunately, some kind of weed has got into it, and it's now covered in a weed. And I've got my gardener working on it, spraying it every day.
You've got a gardener?
Yeah, gardener.
You haven't got a gardener.
It's my housekeeping lady. Right. Yeah, she does it. She doubles up as the gardener.
Well, so she's spraying what?
She's spraying a fertiliser on it every day.
Really?
Is it a fertiliser? A weed killer. She's spraying a weed killer on it every day.
You've got weeds in a roof garden, surely?
Yeah, you have, honestly. And it's taking over the plant pots as well.
Really?
And it's...
You must be doing something wrong.
It's spreading. Well, I don't know where it came from.
It's not like that Japanese knotweed, is it?
Well, it's a bit like that. And she thinks that it will have been brought by a bird dropping a stone into the garden, and it's just kind of spread, you know. So the answer...
So when should he start mowing his lawn?
You should start mowing the lawn when the grass starts growing.
Yeah.
That's quite a simple way to work it out, okay? But don't mow the lawn when it's wet.
Yeah.
And don't mow the lawn particularly when it's wet with an electric mower, because you might electrocute yourself.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's one from LUFC, which I presume is a Leeds fan. Porky, what is the best book you've read?
The best book I've read, and I've said this a couple of times, is The Pillars of the Earth, written by that...
Len Dayton.
No. The left-wing author whose wife was actually an MP.
Oh, yeah.
You know the guy I'm talking
about? I know the guy you mean.
Yeah. The Pillars of the Earth. And funny enough...
Ken Follett.
Thank you very much indeed. He also wrote On the Wings of Eagles, which was
fantastic name?
Book about... I can't remember.
Yeah.
Somebody Follett, wasn't it? Didn't she have his
Barbara name? Follett.
Barbara Follett, that's right, yeah. On the Wings
of Eagles.
She's
disappeared, I think, hasn't she?
She has disappeared completely. On the Wings of Eagles was the Fat Joe documento book that Ken Follett wrote about H. Ross Perot.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Who once ran as an independent for president of the United States. Yeah. He took about 15% of the vote. But he had a business. He was in the computer business. He was the great billionaire computer man before Bill Gates.
Before Bill Gates, yeah. It was something systems he had, wasn't it?
Something systems, yeah. You're absolutely right, down in Texas.
Texas.
He actually came from Texicana.
Right.
And Texicana is a town on the border of Texas, Arkansas, and New Mexico.
Is that right?
It's a unique town.
It's also the name of a song by R.E.M.
Oh, is it? Texicana, yeah. So, anyway, he when before the Shah went down, okay, before the peacock throne and the Shah of Iran, very popular with the West.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Jimmy Carter got in. Jimmy Carter, peanut farmer.
I have lust in my heart.
And the Iranian people recognised a very weak president because the Shah was protected by the Americans. They said, we're going to overthrow this guy and have an Islamist state. So they did.
Yeah.
And Carter couldn't do anything about it. But what it meant was that thousands of Western workers were trapped inside a belligerent country.
Yes.
In which, of course, the Iranian embassy...
Was this before the hostage crisis then or not?
Before the hostage crisis. Well, no, it happened. The hostage crisis happened then. Mm. The US embassy was then taken control of by the insurgents.
Right.
444 days it took to.
And they had I was at university at the time with some American kids.
When they tried to go in across the desert and rescue them.
And they had the problem with the helicopters crashing.
They went down in the desert because the sand got into the motors. Mm. But what I was going to say to you was, the book about Wings on Eagles was H. Ross Perot organised his own rescue and evacuation programme in which he went... And was amongst the guys who did it, and they got out of Iran over the mountains into a neighbouring friendly country like Jordan or somewhere like that.
And Ken Follett wrote the book about it.
Ken Follett wrote the book. It was a brilliant book,
Well, there you go.
So I have to say, and Ken Follett's follow-up to The Pillars of the Earth is another great novel, which I've started reading, and it's just as good, about a Benedictine monastery, which is full of all the prejudices that you see in every other work of life. But if any thief turns up, they cut his arm off for being a thief.
What, in the Benedictine monastery?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
what's the name of that book?
I don't know what it's called.
Okay.
I don't know what it's called, yeah.
Sounds
it's a good
horrendous.
Book. Yeah, right.
Russell has a football question for you. Marco Silva's time at the Toffees is nearly up. Sean Dyche would not join you. So who next for Everton to take a punt on? Stevie Gerrard? And now he says Brendan Rodgers, because obviously he wrote this question before Brendan Rodgers moved
off
to go to Leicester.
Yeah, yeah.
Or would you have Big Sam, all is forgiven Allardyce back?
No, you wouldn't have any of those. And it was a mistake to appoint Marcus Silver in the first place, because, frankly, he just wasn't qualified to take on a club as big as Everton. And people who mocked that and say, what have Everton won since 95 when we won the Cup? Nothing. But they're a big club. Newcastle United are a big club.
Mm.
You know, they haven't won anything since 1969.
You see, Rafa Benitez's name was mentioned in dispatches with Leicester, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yeah.
He could never run Everton, could he?
And Newcastle, no. And no, I wouldn't have him there because he's former Liverpool manager.
Yeah.
And Newcastle haven't won anything domestically since 1955.
Mm.
They only won the Fairs Cup because nobody else wanted to win it.
Yeah.
Bobby Murdoch, I think. No, what was the name of the Newcastle captain who lifted the Intercity Fairs Cup? It was Bobby somebody, but it wasn't Murdoch.
No, Bobby Murdoch. Moncur.
Moncur, well done. Bobby Murdoch was a member of the Celtic Lisbon Lions team.
Okay.
But anyway, the answer to the question is none of those three you've mentioned.
Yeah.
I am told, you know, on good authority, that they will go for the current Leeds manager, Izzy Bueldo, whatever his name is. What's his name?
Bielsa,
that's him,
The guy who goes around spying on everybody else.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I'd like
him.
You'd like him
at Everton?
Well,
you know, he's got a very good pedigree, actually.
He's got a fantastic pedigree.
He's an Argentinian guy. He managed Athletic Bilbao successfully for a while.
Yeah, and people rate him. The only thing that I'm against is he still doesn't speak English.
Yeah.
And he's been in this country...
You say that about every foreign
manager. Yeah, I do, yeah. Yeah, he's been here for 18 months. He still doesn't speak English. Mm. I don't want a non-English speaking manager, right? And by the way, I'm delighted to see that in the League Cup final, which Chelsea lost, one of the failures in the Chelsea team was that bum Ross Barkley. Okay.
You mean the guy that you used to
Everton
think was
reject.
The new great White Hope?
Well, he just couldn't get it to right at Everton.
There were some bad penalties.
It's very unkind for me to call Ross Barkley a bum because
that is unfortunate.
Actually, if Ronald Koeman had treated him properly,
he'd
now be a star player. Yeah, but I mean, how do you define a bum?
Well, I don't think it's a complimentary. Well, it's not a complimentary thing.
Well, I'm going to apologise immediately.
You've been talking about bums hanging around Sutton.
No, no, not one of those.
Tramps.
No, one of those.
So you're making out like he's a tramp.
No, no, I'm relating it to loyalties to a football club.
I see.
And I'm not suggesting for a moment that Ross Barkley was disloyal.
Right. Or I think, that he was a bum.
Oh, and he's definitely not a bum.
Right.
Ronald Koeman treated him badly, and he felt the need to get out, and he had a terrible long-term injury, so it was all a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
But the answer to the question is, without a shadow of a doubt, the favourite, and I'm not sure...
So you want Marcelo Bielsa?
Well, if he would start to learn to speak English, I would say yes. Other than that, who can you think about? Eddie Howe? What about Eddie Howe?
Why would you want Eddie Howe?
Well, Eddie Howe has proved himself to be a decent guy.
You always want to nick somebody else's manager.
Well, there are no managers.
Why don't you bring somebody up from the Championship, maybe?
No, no, no. You couldn't do that.
Why
it's too
not?
Big a challenge.
No, it's not.
Too big a challenge. We brought...
You've had three crap managers, right?
Four.
Since Davy Moyes.
Four.
Four?
Four.
But Silva, Koeman...
Yeah.
Allardyce...
Yeah.
And who was the other one?
Since who?
Since Davy Moyes left.
The other Roberto.
Oh, Roberto Martinez? Yeah, he wasn't crap. He was good.
Well, yeah, but he got sacked in the end.
Well, yeah, but hang on.
Sacked in the end.
Well, you look at him now...
Yeah.
And you wish you still had him.
Not really, but I mean, he's in charge of Belgium, number three in the world.
Well, exactly.
But he's got some good players.
He's got very good players. Strength to strength.
Yeah.
Now, Dave
says
this: if you got into politics, what party would you stand for, and which constituency would you most like to represent, and why?
Well, I would stand as an independent, and I think in this modern day
age... Would you be
one
of the independent group?
Well, I wouldn't join the independent group. I'd be independent.
Chuckarumuna.
Yeah, Chuckarumuna, anything like that. I wouldn't do all that, but I'd be independent, and I would represent... As long as it was a wealthy constituency, you know, people who'd strived all their life to make themselves wealthy, who had money, who had breeding. No, no, no. Stockbroker Belt, Surrey. Although there's nothing wrong with people in Sutton, apart from the guys who lie on the floor outside the railway station, obviously, which is what
you
talked about.
Well, you know the MP for Sutton, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, you drink with him.
I do.
Yeah.
And his name is...
Paul Scully, isn't it?
Paul Scully. Paul Scully's the guy. It's a huge picture of him on the side of the Conservative building.
Yeah.
And if you go into one of the pubs there...
Yeah.
And I sit at my favourite table. I look up, look out the window. Mm. All you can see is Paul Scully's face, on the side of the Conservative building.
Right.
But a good guy. And you've had him on your show
you
a few times on Talk Radio.
No, he speaks very highly of you.
Yeah, that's right.
Strangely enough.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, that's right, yeah. I see him now and then. We have a few pints together. And he is very much a Brexiteer.
He is. He wants to get the hell out.
And you need to talk to him again soon and get some guidance there on what's going on.
So you'd like to sort of have a southern constituency?
I'd like a Stockbroker Belt constituency.
Once again, abandoning your flock in the north.
No. My flock in the north sometimes prefer to have, like, Labour politicians because they still believe in old-fashioned socialism or old-fashioned Labour, which I don't object to. But I couldn't actually put my heart into their old-fashioned Labouriteness. However, please remember that old-fashioned Labour values, which were strong and full of character and commitment and depth, are very different to what Jeremy Corbyn wants to bring to this country, which is basically bankruptcy, odious communism, Marxism, Leninism, poverty for the masses, corruption, bullying, intimidation...
Yeah.
And probably would like to round a load of people up and put them into work camps.
Yeah.
I sincerely believe
a lot of people
that.
In the media, I'd imagine.
Sincerely
which
believe
brings
that.
On to our last question of this section,
yes.
Which is from David. When you leave the country if Corbyn gets in, it's a simple yes or no question.
No, because you have to fight from within.
Yeah.
I'm not going to abandon my country. No. I would fight from within. And if it came to having to go and do things like put banana skins outside Downing Street so he slipped on them and all that kind of stuff, I would do that.
Banana skins?
Yeah.
That's a bit primitive, isn't it?
Wouldn't want to hurt the man or anything like that, but I'd like to remind him in some small way that there is a very, very strong feeling and group of people around here who don't want you to wreck our country after we spent thousands of years building it, OK?
All right.
We do not want to be a communist state. We do not want to be Marxist-Leninist. I would suggest that anybody who thinks about voting for Mr Corbyn goes right now to a Waterstones bookshop or W.H. Smith and orders a copy of Animal Farm. That will explain Corbynite socialism to you perfectly.
OK. Now, back to the questions. This is Ask Porky. We're in the midst of it. We've got time for about another 15 minutes worth.
Good.
Here's one from Cal, who says, Mike, you have conquered the media world. The two Mikes have conquered the comedy and political analysis world with aplomb.
Yes.
Isn't it time for a change? With the Celtic job now vacant, isn't it time the two Mikes conquered the football management world? Planks, beware.
Well, Listen, without being unkind to anybody at Celtic, you don't have to be a great manager to manage Celtic. Celtic have the vast majority of the resources in Scottish football. All you've got to do is qualify every year for the Champions League and you're on 20 million quid. And nobody else can touch that by a mile, okay? That's the great advantage of finishing at the top in Scotland. And once you do, it's self-fulfilling, isn't it? Self-perpetuating. You've got the 20 million quid from last season's Champions League. You're going to spend that on players over the summer and you're going to be the better team again and the better team again. Now, obviously, Stephen Gerrard...
Although it's been a bit more difficult this season, hasn't it?
Well, of course it has, because Stephen Gerrard's come in, and Stephen Gerrard, top professional. And maybe, I mean, Stephen Gerrard don't think will do it this season, although now that Celtic have lost their manager, who knows whether they'll have a bubble.
But some of the other teams have come up a bit as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they have, I agree. Falkirk.
Hearts have been all right.
Kilmarnock.
Hibs haven't been too bad.
Hibs haven't been too bad, absolutely right. And it could well be, Celtic might now go through a wobble because, of course, they lost their manager and they're settling in with the new administration, so to speak. And as not a football man at all, but it wouldn't be hard to manage Celtic.
Yeah, but you see, you as a manager of anything now, and I'd probably be the same, would have very short shrift in any organisation.
I agree.
Because you're too long in the tooth and you're too set in your ways.
Yeah.
And I think you'd find it very difficult to give in to player power, for example.
Probably. When I was listening to the debate about the new manager for Leicester, the new manager for Celtic and all this, there's two sorts of managers. There's a manager who stands on the side and watches his coaches putting his players through the paces.
Yeah.
And that's very much a sort of Martin O'Neill.
Yeah.
Very much a Brian Clough from the past, okay.
Yeah.
And then there's the other sort of manager... which includes Brendan Rodgers, who likes to take what they call the sessions, who likes to get in there.
Get the old tracksuit on.
Put the old tracksuit on, get in there.
Yeah.
Davey Moyes is very much that sort of manager, loves getting involved. Uh-huh. Bill Shankly was always that manager. Harry Kattrick wasn't, he stood on the sidelines and all that. And nobody knows whether one is better than the other. Mm. It depends on the individual character involved, you know? I think Eddie Howe is very much a get-involved type manager.
Well, that's
about
how old you are and how young
you
are.
Yeah, I suppose it does. Well, no, some managers still knock a ball around. I mean, Roy Hodgson, believe it or not, still tries to get involved in sessions. But he is now, you know, he's now the oldest manager who's ever managed in the Premier League.
Is that right?
71.
That is too old, isn't
71.
It? I think I've got nothing against Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you should step aside at a certain point.
Mind you.
And give your job to a younger man.
Yeah, you say that. But of course, Claude Puel, the former manager of Leicester.
Who I, of course, predicted his demise.
Well, he predicted his demise.
And you ridiculed me for saying that he was going to go.
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
I had no comment on it.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't comment on it.
Because immediately after I predicted his demise, Leicester beat Manchester City and I think beat Chelsea.
Yeah, but guess what happened when Roy Hodgson got there?
Yeah.
Crystal Palace beat them 4-1 while you were away.
Yeah.
And that was the end of Claude Puel because he was so...
I said he was on a slippery slope.
Yeah, let's have another question.
All right. Ricardo says, Porky, what is your weight loss secret? You're looking good. I've never seen you so slim.
That's very nice. Thank you very much indeed.
To be fair, well, I think he might be commenting on an earlier picture.
No, no.
Which was put out some weeks ago.
What was that about?
Well, it was when we were putting out, you know, asking Porky questions.
Yeah, okay.
Because we collect them over a series of days before we record.
Yeah, well...
And it was actually a picture from when we went to New York.
Oh, okay. Well, suffering chronic diabetes too, you have to really watch your weight. Now, funny enough, right, whilst you were away, there was a Sunday Times colour magazine.
Yeah.
And there was a picture of Bertie Bassett, the licorice all sorts man on the front, okay? And the title was The Epidemic That's Killing Britain. Do you know that 1 in 10 people over 40 now have diabetes 2?
That's crazy, isn't it?
1 in 10.
I'm surprised it's not more than that, actually.
Well, I'm surprised it's not more than that when you look at some of the people. When I read the piece, I realised how fortunate I am to have caught it so early.
Yeah.
Because some people ignore the symptoms.
Right.
Now, the symptoms are getting up in the middle of the night and drinking a litre of Dr. Pepper's.
Right.
And then 2 hours later...
Does it have to be a sort of fizzy, sweet type drink? Is that what you crave?
Well, yeah, it curdles sugar.
So it's not like just drinking water?
No, you can't drink water. Water doesn't satisfy you at all. Oh, No, it's that. Eating cartons of ice cream.
Yeah. So you crave sugar, in other words?
Well, it's...
Like a fly.
It's as bad a craving as being a drug addict. So, for instance...
Well, it's easy to get, though.
Of course it's much easier to...
You have to go to some crack den, do you? Just have to go down to your local Morrison's.
Drug addicts can get it anywhere. But for instance, I would sit there watching Coronation Street and I'd put 4 digestive biscuits on a plate and I always put them on a plate because I don't like the crumbs to drop on me while I'm watching television, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I'd munch through those.
What sort of digestives? Milk?
Plain. Not even chocolate. Not even chocolate on them, just plain. I would then go away and get another 4.
Mm.
And then another 4.
A bit dry without any tea on
it. Well, I'd have tea. Oh, I'd have tea. Or more usually... red or white wine.
Well, you drink them with wine.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
See, I find sweet things with anything. Yeah. Apart, I'll tell you what goes well with champagne, strawberries and champagne.
Yeah, okay.
Dipped in chocolate, that can be nice.
Well, funny enough, one of the stories about Bob Maxwell was that... voracious bully, voracious...
pig, really.
Pig, yeah.
Complete greedy pig.
Greedy pig, we didn't like him. And used to literally have tubs of caviar on his desk in his office with a pile of, 20 biscuits, and he would scoop it out all day and eat it all day long. You know, even when people were in the room talking.
His breath must have been pretty awful.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Horrible.
He's a ghastly individual, horrible,
disgusting individual. Mm. But... when he used to entertain people, do you remember he had that place on the top of the old Mirror building on Colmore Circus?
Yeah, yeah.
With his helicopter on the roof and all that.
Yeah.
He used to invite people up there, and Charlie Wilson was telling me, because Charlie Wilson was the director of the Mirror Group in those days after he finished at the Times, right?
Right.
And what he used to do is he used to insist on nothing but the best champagne, and then a bowl of strawberries. He used to slice up strawberries and put them into his champagne.
Right.
And by the end
of... strawberries and champagne do go well.
Yeah, and by the end of every dinner, or everybody else will slice up their strawberries with the champagne.
Yeah.
And the grovellers were the ones who said, oh, you do that as well, do you, Bob? Yeah, that's brilliant.
Like
all
making
that.
Out they did it all the time.
Yeah, and he used to watch and see how long it took each person around the table to suddenly follow this this tradition of slicing up the champagne. So what was the question again?
The question was... Yeah. How did you get your weight loss?
Oh, yes, that's right. So I cut out all sugar altogether.
Yeah.
I still like drinking beer.
Uh-huh.
The piece I'm telling about, Sunday Times, said that wine is better for you than beer.
But in terms of what?
Well, in terms of the input of sugar in your body.
Right. Okay.
But they don't know how much wine I drink.
Well, I think if you drink as much wine as we do,
it
can't be a good thing.
A bottle of white and a bottle of red a day is 2 pints of wine.
Right.
And without a shadow of a doubt, 4 pints of beer is better for you.
Yes.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
And 4 pints on... a lively day.
Yeah.
Some days 1 pint, 2 pints, some days nothing.
Yeah.
Okay?
All right.
Yeah.
So that's the secret. Here's one from Lee.
Yeah.
Would you consider leaving your fortune to a cat like Karl Lagerfeld did?
No, I think it's dreadful. What a complete waste of money.
Well, not really.
Complete waste of resources.
Yeah.
Why don't leave it to the homeless?
Yeah.
Leave it to the underprivileged? Leave it to those with mental problems?
Maybe the cat can do that.
No, he can't. Leave it to sick people. But don't leave it to a cat. Ridiculous. And I have to say, there's been this expression around for onks. Oinks, centuries.
Hmm.
You got more money than you got sense. That is definitely true of anybody who leaves money to an animal.
That is.
You seem to have cut yourself there.
I seem to have cut myself.
Well, we're broadcasting. Mm. What's happening there?
Well, I've just scratched my arm.
Yeah, yeah.
Where there was obviously some kind of a little spot.
Well, you know, that could be a sign of diabetes because, of course, your blood thins. You know
very
what I mean?
Very much
I'd watch
doubt it.
I'd watch it.
Right. Here we go. Here's one from Lee.
Yes.
Leo, I should say. Who's going up in the automatic places in the Championship and will they finish above Everton next season?
Who knows? Watford came up last season and they're now above Everton in the Premier League and probably will finish. We've got a horrendous run of home games now. Do you know what our next game is?
Well, do you know, I noticed when I came back from LA at the weekend that Everton weren't playing, so I presume you were supposed to play Man City or Chelsea.
We were supposed to play Man City and that was brought forward. We lost that one. So in the midweek game was against Cardiff.
Right.
We all know what happened there.
Yeah.
And then after that, of course, it was Everton-Liverpool. We won't talk about that one.
Yeah.
And Everton's run of home games is just horrendous, you know. So the answer to your question is, I think Leeds almost certainly will get up. I think Norwich will almost certainly get up. And then the rest is up for grabs.
Mm.
I think the team that maybe are most disappointed, and a week and a half ago they lost Nottingham Forest, is Derby.
Yeah.
Because
everyone expected great things from Frank Lampard.
Frank Lampard's at the start of the season, the Premier League's the only place to be. Look around this ground, and he looked around Derby's ground. It's not called the baseball ground anymore.
No, it's not. It's named after a company, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's
not 365, but it's something like that.
No, it's not 365. It's not the... I used to go to the baseball ground, and it was next to a canal, and the pitch always flooded because the water from the canal used to seep under the pitch and rise up on the pitch.
That was when Alan Hinton used to play.
Alan Hinton, Kevin Hector, all those guys, that's right. When Clough was in charge,
and then
Dave McKay. And the answer to your question is Norwich and Leeds, certainly.
Mm.
And who would be the third team to go up? Almost certainly... could it be a late run by somebody like Sunderland?
No, it can't be Sunderland. They're the one league below.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A late run by somebody...
Aston Villa?
Like Aston Villa or Birmingham.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Could be. Mm. Now, here's one from Greg, who says, what was the dynamic like when you both worked together? I think he means in newspapers. Did you ever imagine you'd end up working in broadcasting?
Well, you can't see what life has to offer in the future. I mean, you were running a very successful business in New York. I was top dog on the Daily Express because I was working with Phil Finn. Phil was a very nice guy sometimes, very bitter man sometimes, you know. He wasn't very good, Phil.
He wasn't very happy either.
He wasn't happy because of his wife, Anne-Marie. Well, no.
She's still around, you know.
Yeah, I know she's still around.
Well, you don't want to be unkind.
No, well, they just had an awkward relationship, that was all.
Right.
And Phil also... Phil only became bureau chief because the real bureau chief, Brian Vine, was too expensive. And
he was recalled.
The new editor came in, Larry Lamb, Mr. Vine, when I read in the magazine that you have a string of horses at Syracuse, you have a house on Fire Island with a boat parked alongside it, your children go to private schools.
You just appeared on the cover of New York Magazine.
In Manhattan, you appeared on the cover of New York Magazine saying, of course, I can't afford to go back to London. My lifestyle here is too good. I have something
can't
to tell you, Mr. Bryan. You are fucking coming back.
What a flake.
See you next week.
And he refused, didn't he? Because he ended up going back to the Mail. Because I found him, funnily enough. I was working for the Mail on Sunday.
Right.
And suddenly this figure sort of honed into view.
Loomed in, yeah.
Who used to completely ignore me when I was in New York.
He was a big man. He was a big
physically
lost a bit
of weight at this point. But he'd basically become managing editor of the Daily Mail.
Yes.
Because Dacre had given him a job.
Yes, that's right.
But Dacre gave him the job basically just to punish him. Because,
that's right.
Because he used to treat Dacre terribly badly in New York.
When Brian Vine was the bureau chief of the Express, he used to say to Dacre, get on with it, Dacre.
Yeah.
I remember a mate of
and
mine...
And he sent him out for his dry cleaning, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Johnny Jinks went over there, right, and he was in New York, and Johnny went up to the bureau. John was the news editor in London before me. John was useless, and I was great, you know, by comparison.
Of course.
And John said it was terrible. He said, I walked in the bureau and the stretcher limo was waiting downstairs to take him to Syracuse, you know, to see one of Brian's horses running, you know. And he said, right, and Dacre was the junior member of the bureau. Right, Dacre, and I told you to get that fucking feature out, haven't I? Get that fucking feature out. And he said, get yourself into Costello's for 7:30 and have the drinks lined up when John and I come back from Syracuse, okay? It was all like that.
Oh, yeah, it was all like that. Well, he came up sidling up to me one day, and I was sitting in this kind of cubby hole working for the Mail on Sunday, some secret project.
Yeah.
Hello, Mike, how are you? And I sort of, I mean, I was pleasant to him, but I thought, you've got some fucking cheek.
Yeah, that's right,
because clearly nobody was talking to him, and he saw me and thought, oh, well, there's somebody I know. But he'd completely ignored me and treated me like scum. For the years that I was...
He'd never buy us a drink. We were too young.
He used to deliberately not buy me one. He'd buy a drink for 10 people, and he would deliberately say to Freddie the barman,
not for him.
Not one for him.
Yeah.
He hasn't earned it yet.
Yeah.
You know, fucking twat.
Twat, yeah.
Anyway, a couple more here for you before we finally call horn. Now, this is a good one from Richard. For clarification, please, Porky, once and for all, what exactly is your definition officially of blado in modo?
Blado in modo means that we should all enjoy drink. And it also means that, you know, you don't have to accord to all these ridiculous health warnings about 14 units a week or 21 units a week, depending if you're a man or a woman.
Yeah.
It means you should drink as much as you feel comfortable and happy with, but it also means that you mustn't let drink blight your life. So, for instance, if you drink so much that you can't remember what you've done the next day, it's a very dangerous position to be in these days.
Yes.
If you've got a mobile phone in your pocket,
indeed,
right, you may not know what you've done.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is try and be responsible with the blado in modo. The places where you have to be extra careful is like a race meeting.
Yes.
So you go off to a race meeting, go with a load of chums.
Cheltenham's coming up.
Cheltenham's coming up. Now, there's a load of people who don't need to be warned about blado in modo because they never... differ in their behaviour, whether they're bladderated or not bladderated, and Mr. Alan Brazil is one of them. I've never really seen Al drunk, to be honest. He has such a capacity for drink that his behaviour pattern doesn't really vary, whatever he's been doing, you know. But I, on the other hand, I'm full of anger and prejudices sometimes about people, and I get on the phone and I give it to them, and that's not good because it means that you then have to jump over a few hurdles.
Well,
to
you've done a lot better yourself, lately, though, haven't you?
You get yourself back on the straight and narrow. All I'm saying is, blado in modo is just a guide to all of us.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to have a drink. Enjoy as much drink as you want, but don't ever do it to the excessive point where you make a mistake and cause problems in your own life.
Quite right. Paul says, Porky, is it okay to give a gift of a household appliance as a wedding anniversary present? I've been warned against it, but the missus has been hinting that she wants one of those Dyson vacuums, and our anniversary is coming up.
Well, it's disgraceful that you should buy a household appliance for your wife's anniversary.
Well, they're quite expensive, you know.
They're very expensive, and I bought one for my cleaner, actually.
Did you? That's
yeah,
nice
and,
of you.
And I put it off for years when you had to put a bracket on the wall and have it charged on wall.
Right.
But now you just plug it in and charge it like you charge your phone.
Yeah.
And then she goes whizzing around the apartment and gets it sorted. And it's a change in her life because the cord itself on the old Hoover had been cut three times when she'd run over it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, have that to improve your wife's ability to clean the house. But don't, for goodness sake, make it an anniversary present. Do something romantic, man. For goodness sake, starting with 24 red roses, and a box of chocolates, and a piece of jewellery to mark the anniversary, but not a Hoover.
Okay. A couple more quick ones to get finished with. John says, would Porky agree that the old adage, manners maketh man, still applies in this day and age?
Yes, I would, actually. I mean, you and I have worked for people over the years whose view of how to run an office and how to talk to their staff was, fuck this, fuck that, you that, you know, intimidating, bullying, unnecessary. People don't perform well if they're being shouted at and if somebody's breathing down their neck and telling them they're useless. People do not perform well. People perform better when they're encouraged and when they're told that, look, we didn't get it right this time. Let's try again this way. Let's do it that way. That makes a great business, makes a good place to work. Shouting there, standing and shouting at people who are doing their best but not getting there, you do one of two things. You either put your arm around them and say, look, I know you're up to this, so I'm going to try and find you another job.
Yeah.
Or you say, you're not trying hard enough, and if you're not trying hard enough, don't want you here, try harder and get it right. There was a guy I worked with once on the Birmingham Mail in London who was absolutely effing useless, right? And he was just a local lad who'd been employed. He had no real newspaper experience, started off as a copy boy in the London office of the Birmingham Evening Mail, and some idiot along the way made him a reporter.
Right.
But he didn't have a clue. He had no legal training. He didn't know anything. But he was very keen on bikes.
Yeah.
And he liked going off and riding
motorbikes?
His bike. No, cyclists.
Really?
He was a cyclist.
Oh, God.
And he went off cycling his bike at the weekends. And I noticed occasionally he came in with a cycling magazine.
Uh-huh.
You know, they have bike magazines, cycling magazines.
Uh-huh.
And I had to get rid of him because I was rebuilding the office, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Under instructions from Birmingham.
Yeah.
And I said, look, you've got to go, Dave. I remember his name was Dave, and he was terrified because he wouldn't get a job anywhere else.
Yeah.
But I rang up the editor of the bike magazine I'd seen on his desk.
Yeah.
Told him this man was first class, that he was wanted to move from working on newspapers into specialist publications, that he was a genius with bikes and all that. He said, send him to see me, went to see him, and I got him a job on the bike magazine.
Well, that was misrepresentation, though. The guy was useless.
Didn't matter. At least I helped the boy to get... No, but he turned out to be great working for a bike magazine. Yeah, he did,
All right.
Yeah.
One final question from Steve.
Yeah, yeah.
Given a celebrity with no political background became president of the United States, which British celebrity do you think could do the job in number 10, and why?
Good question. If we brought somebody out... I mean, somebody like Hugh... What's his name? Hugh Grant.
He's played the Prime Minister, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. He played him in such a dilettante manner that you could never do that. If there was one celebrity in this country, if you can call him a celebrity, I think it'd make a good Prime Minister, it would be Lord Alan Sugar.
Uh-huh.
Because he's a very successful businessman, and he's a celebrity on the sense he's got a high-flying TV show, OK? So I would nominate him. I can't really think of anybody else who's bright enough, hard enough, decisive enough, or intelligent enough, or has the wherewithal
has the
to make decisions.
Yeah, I mean, some of the bigger businessmen might be able to do it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But they wouldn't like the actual scrutiny that they'd have to put up with.
No, they
wouldn't like to have to be told how to behave.
No, that's right. So I can't really... But, I mean, the great thing about America is they take captains of industry and blend them into politicians. In this country, we don't. I've never understood how a bloke who's formerly been a city broker, like Sajid Javid, right?
Uh-huh.
Our Home Secretary.
Home Secretary, yeah.
What does he know about being a Home Secretary after he's like made himself a multi-million pound fortune?
The same thing about the people who get given health.
Of course you
defense.
Can. Defence. Of course you can.
I mean, that guy that, don't tell them Pike.
Yeah,
that they
that's
keep
right.
saying Hancock.
Yeah.
Matt Hancock, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
Who's now Defence Secretary.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what the fuck does he know about defence?
He knows so little about it that on the day that we were about to fly out to, Philip Hammond was about to fly out to China to start negotiations on new trade deals, old, you know, don't tell them Pike.
Yeah.
Tell the world that I'm sending our new carriage to the South China Sea to sort the Chinese out.
Yeah.
So immediately the talks were cancelled.
Exactly.
Brilliant politician.
What a plank.
Yeah.
We are the two mics. That was Ask Porky.
It was. Mike Hutchins hanged himself on the back door of a hotel bedroom, didn't he?
Well,
when he was apparently exploring
auto-erotica,
to give himself a bit of hard-on.
Supposedly with a couple of hookers.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Whilst he was indulging in sexual relations, and it kind of went a bit wrong, you know.
Well, it certainly did go a bit wrong.
Yeah, so then she was at his funeral.
Yeah.
Remember they had all those, like, thousands of lilies on top of his coffin?
Lilies. Not really.
Yeah, it was in Australia.
Yeah.
And then she took the ashes, and then she actually she took one little part of the ashes and sewed them into the pillow on her bed so she could sleep next to Michael every night. And she had another packet of ashes that she carried around in her handbag all the time.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter. She was as fucking screwed up as Michael Hutchins
was. Well, that's not very nice. And she didn't speak ill of the dead.
Well, she went and killed herself then on an overdose.
Oh, hang on. She didn't speak ill of the dead.
Well, I'm not speaking ill of the dead.
Well, you said she was fucking nutcase.
Well
not exactly
she was. But, I mean, that was when she was alive. You know, I don't know what she's like when she's dead.
He came up silently up to me one day, and I was sitting in this kind of cubbyhole working for the Mail on Sunday, some secret project.
Yeah.
Hello, Mike, how are you? And I sort of, I mean, I was pleasant to him, but I thought, you've got some fucking cheek.
Yeah, that's right.
Clearly nobody was talking to him, and he saw me and thought, oh, well, there's somebody I know.
Yeah.
But he completely ignored me and treated me like scum. For the years
he never buy us a drink. We were too young.
He used to deliberately not buy me one. He'd buy a drink for 10 people, and he would deliberately say to Freddie the barman,
"Not for him.
Not one for him.
Yeah.
He hasn't earned it yet."
Yeah,
you know,
twat.
I've just scratched my arm where there was obviously some kind of a little spot.
Well, you know, that could be a sign of diabetes because, of course, your blood thins. You know
very
what I mean?
Very much
I'd watch it.